Welcome to the Austin Gardener with Cheryl McLaughlin on News Radio KLBJ. Call Cheryl now with your questions about gardening or landscaping at 512-836-0590, pound 590 on your wireless, or toll free 1-877-590-KLBJ.
Can you hear me? Okay. There we go. Now I sound like I'm on the air. For a minute there, I thought, am I really here? Hey, happy Easter, everybody. I hope you're having a wonderful day. I'm going to go to an event later today myself, but that's why I'm here doing the show, because I was fine to come in this morning. And you are welcome to join the show. 512-836-0590 is the call or text number. And we also have a toll-free line, which is 877-590-5525. So again, 512-836-0590 is the call or text number. And I've been listening to Jeff's show for a little while, starting around 9 o'clock this morning. And I have a couple of comments related to things I heard on that show, which we'll get to in a minute. But first, we have a caller on the line, so let's go to South Austin. Hey, Kim, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you today?
Really good. Really good. Thank you.
I sent 2 photos. I tried to get in as close as possible because I've heard you complain about not being able to enlarge the photos. But I have a golden bobblehead tree. I've had several, and as they've died, I've let other volunteers grow. And for some reason, even though they're in full sun, they tend to try to grow towards the street. And one question is, should I or can I sort of stake it a little bit so that it's maybe not just going straight to the street? And also, they get so, they grow so straight up and not branching like very much to where maybe, you know, they break the branches are kind of tender and they are not very strong and they tend to break off later as the tree gets larger. Could I like cut them to sort of get them to branch?
To bush out a little bit more. Yeah, normally you can. They're not a very strong tree. They are a very delicate tree, to be honest with you. A lot of times they do become multi-trunked. So yours is pretty young, I think. I'm looking at the pictures that you sent. But let's start with the first question. Yes, you can gently stake it. But remember, people, when y'all stake any trees or anything like that, it has to be loose enough to where it can sway in the wind. And I've seen this a million times, you know how they'll stake young trees right in the middle of the trunk and they don't give them room to sway back and forth because they have to develop their strength from the ground. Otherwise, they develop it right where that stake was holding it. And then if we get a real hard wind, a lot of times it'll just snap off right there. So yes, you can gently stake it to be a little bit straighter. Looks like that fence would be a good thing. You could pull it back to the fence a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that tree that's in the yard behind it provides shade. I can't tell from the pictures how close it is, but if it's getting shade from that tree in the afternoon, it might.
It doesn't get any shade.
It gets no shade. Okay.
No shade.
Well, then it's just, you can probably stake it and get it to go a little bit straighter up. And you can, when it's dormant, you can trim it back. The golden bobblehead tree can be a bushier, but it's definitely a more of a delicate kind of shrub.
Yeah, I love them. I mean, this is my third tree. I've lost one to too much rain one year. Mm-hmm. That had, it was like over 10 years old. And then one, I guess, from all the cold, of the last big freeze that died. It lived through Uri, but then the next time we got down to 9 degrees or whatever, it didn't make it.
they are. That's the thing. They're kind of a pretty rare native. And golden ball lead tree, I only ever saw one in the wild, and it's no longer there. So they're kind of disappearing. I just think conditions aren't as favorable as they used to be for them. But I love them, too. My neighbor's got one. I'm trying to remember if we planted it. But it's blooming. So, yeah, golden ball lead tree. It's an interesting tree. It's different.
Great. Well, thank you very much for the information.
Sure. Thanks for calling today. Have a good Easter. See you later.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, 512-836-0590 is the call or text line. So, listen, Jeff and I disagree on something, and it doesn't mean that he's wrong and I'm right, but it's just my, you know, 40 years of landscaping experience and stuff that I use to go by most of the time. But I feel like it's a little early to fertilize the lawns, to be honest with you. You know, I've got a little... I've got Zoysia, but right now I have vetch and a bunch of other stuff, weeds growing. And if I was to put fertilizer out there right now, I'd have the biggest vetch in Travis County probably. So I've always gone by the April fertilizing date. It's been kind of cool, which has been lovely, by the way, but it has been kind of cool. And typically, you want to have your grass really up and going before you want to fertilize it. So sometimes you even want to wait till you've had to mow twice to fertilize it. But right now, I just feel like those late winter weeds or early spring weeds and stuff are really the ones that are going to benefit. So in my book, we'd wait another 3 weeks or so before we'd put down the fertilizer. But that's just me. That's just me. And the truth is, time-release organic fertilizer, it's not going to hurt anything to put it down. It's just, what is it do you want to promote right now? You know what I mean? All right, let's go to the phones. Hey, Roger, Northeast Austin, how you doing?
Happy Easter, Cheryl.
Yes, sir, you too.
I got some turch cap growing out, and I just wonder if I can dig some up, do root cuttings off of it, and transplant it. Does that work good? Or?
Yeah, you can dig up little clumps of it. That's good. Just make sure that little clump that you do dig up has roots attached to it.
Okay. Some I planted last year, it didn't work, and I bought that from one of the nurseries. It did not come back this year, and I just kind of
really
strange that it's a native plant, and this, I mean, it's not there anymore.
Huh. Well, do you have super heavy clay soil or something?
I live on farmland out east of Austin. This old dairy farm I live on.
Yeah.
So they used to grow wheat and all kinds of stuff out here. So.
But it's not that hard clay that cracks and all that.
No. We got a couple of feet of black dirt here.
Yeah. Well, it probably ought to work. I don't know why it didn't work, but they are really native up on the hill country. I don't know whether it would have been where y'all live or not originally. But it's typically pretty easy. Turk's cap's pretty easy to grow. So are you saying you already have a patch of it and you want to dig some of...
Oh, I got multiple patches of it. It's just come up over the last 20 or 30 years.
I see. That's what I was wondering. Yeah. Well, then if you have it already and you just want to divide it and move some around or do something with it, right?
Yeah, that's all I would like to do. Something from my sister's house, what I'm going to do.
Yeah, dig up a pretty good-sized clump of it.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Cheryl. Have a great day.
All right, y'all too. Bye-bye. Now, of course, I want to cough my head off. Let's see. Okay, 512-836-0590. That's the call or text line. And I'll get back to these texts here in a minute. But let's get that first break done, and we'll be back after this.
Welcome to the Austin Gardener with Cheryl McLaughlin on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM.
Okay, we are back. And again, if you all want to join in, 512-836-0590 is the call or text line. And the toll-free line is 877-590-5525. I've got a text here that says, I have a few cedar trees around my house that have either turned brown or the top of the cedar trees have died and the bottom is still green. Should I cut down the brown ones and cut the top out of the ones that are still green but dead on the bottom? Or dead on top, rather, should I wait and see if they'll come back? If they are truly, truly dead, they won't come back. But if, I don't know which kind of cedar we're talking about, if we're just talking about the, you know, the native cedar trees or one of the cultivar ones, you know, because some of those cedars aren't native. But once they turn brown, and it's early for spider mites, So I don't think that's what's doing it, because that'll for sure turn it brown and possibly even kill it. But there's another kind of little boar thing that gets them. And I've lost them in my woods around my house. I've had them go completely brown and die. So I don't know for sure what you have going on, but I would not cut off a top of a tree if it was, okay, so it's a native Texas cedar. Yeah, if you cut a top off a tree, that leader never comes back. So sounds to me like you might want to get somebody out there to look at these and see what's going on. If it's temporary damage, it might be that, you know, somebody could spray them for you or something like that. But I wouldn't cut the top off. I think if the top half died, I'd probably take the whole thing out. That's just me. But, yeah, they do get a little, kind of like a little beetle thing that'll kill them. So let's see here. Who's next? Okay, we did that one. Now, here's another. Okay, here's a close-up. My goodness. It's a branch with peaches, just loaded with peaches. And it says, do I need to remove some peaches to make them bigger? Every branch is loaded. Yeah, I would do like maybe little clumps of three and then take some off. There's probably better information on how to thin a peach tree. A lot of times they'll do it themselves. They'll just throw off the peaches. Let me see if my organic gardening book has anything to say about it. I doubt that he would talk about that because he's not a big person on pruning. But let's just see what he says about peach. Okay. Blah, blah, blah. Prune out the 2-year-old gray shoots in late winters. No, it doesn't talk anything about, but I know that thinning a young tree is the right thing to do to have bigger, better peaches. And as I said, a lot of times they'll throw off some of the peaches themselves. But I would go to the AgriLife, whatever county you're in, website. And there's going to be a lot of choices there, horticulture, home gardens, home orchards. And there you will find the information on how to thin this tree. And if anybody else listening can give me a quick answer to this, then I'd appreciate it. I've never actually grown a peach tree. But that, I cannot believe how many peaches are on this tree. That is amazing. Wonder what kind it is. Let's see here. Good morning, Cheryl. I'm starting a section in the yard for pollinators. Last week you mentioned your favorite plant for pollinators, and I missed the name. Can you mention it again, please? Thank you, Shirley. Well, I did talk about a lot of stuff last week, but I think it depends on, you know, which plant. But let's just talk about butterflies. That would be probably, I would have said, Greg's mist flower. For bees, there's a lot of stuff out there that they like. Pretty much any kind of fragrant bloomer, they would love. Oddly enough, they love star jasmine. That's not even a native, but they sure do love that. Hummingbirds are not pollinators per se, but any salvia, and almost all the native salvias work for bees, butterflies, and hummingbirds because they just have a great little tubular flower. And of course, we would talk about, for the monarchs, we would talk about getting the milkweed because that's a larval plant for them. And monarchs will feed on anything. A white mist flower, they love that. They love evergreen sumac. Those are things that are blooming when they migrate through here. So I'm not really sure which thing I was talking about, but I was talking about a lot of pollinators. If you just do a good mix of wildflowers, you know, bees will use mountain laurel. They'll use clover, all kind of stuff. Let's see. Hi, Cheryl. I'm having a heck of a time finding upright phlox in stock at local nurseries. I can find the creeping, but not the regular phlox. Am I too early, too late? Thank you. I think you're a little bit early. You know, a lot of times the nurseries don't want to put out something that's a bloomer unless it's actually blooming. And this, what you're talking about, the upright phlox, is what I call summer phlox. Other people call it garden phlox. And it might be a teeny bit early for that. I don't know what nurseries y'all are looking for, but I bet it'll be out soon. I bet you it'll be out soon. Garden phlox is such a great plant. I love them. I forget to talk about them. But I do love those. My neighbor used to have the most beautiful stand of it in the world. Happy Easter. Thank you. Happy Easter to y'all, too. Let's see. So this peach tree that they showed me a picture of that we were talking about thinning it, it says that they are in Bastrop, and it's a Gulf King peach. That is amazing, man. And I think here we got somebody talking about how to thin them out. Let me go to that text real quick. Let's see. Yes, those peaches need to be thinned out about 4 inches between each peach. Larger peaches, and then the branches won't break due to extreme weight. This year is a banner year. Mine are covered as well. Wow, that is so good to know. Maybe this year I'll finally get another Dixie peach from Fredericksburg. I'll just never forget when you have the best peach of your life. And that one peach, best peach I ever had, and it was they called it Dixie peach. I've later seen that I think the tree's actually called Dixie Land, but oh my gosh, what a great peach that was. I think about it a lot. I haven't been up there in a long time. Happy Easter, Cheryl. Is this the weed? It's everywhere in the yard, and I've never seen them before. Thanks. I cannot tell exactly what that is in the yard. It looks like a little weed, but then so do things like sunflowers. I'd give it a little time and see what it does. I cannot exactly identify it. I am not positive what that is. I am so sorry. But a lot of people have been talking about the different apps that they use to identify plants. You know, I always mention the, plant, I can't remember the name of it. But there's all these apps for identifying plants. Somebody recently recommended iNaturalist. Somebody else says Google Lens or something like that. What's the one we talk about all the time? Plant this or something. Anyway, you might want to get you a one of those apps. Some of them are free, and just see if you can't send that picture through and get an ID on it, because I am not positive what that is. Okay, peaches, thank you. All right. Okay, 512-836-0590. Let's go to Georgetown. Hey, Mike, what's going on?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes. I got a question. Rock phosphate, is it good to put in the hole with the tomatoes?
Absolutely.
I've got the extra strong.
Well, you maybe use a teeny bit less, but you can't really hurt anything with rock phosphate, and it's always so good for promoting root growth. So throw your little half a handful down there.
Well, a friend of mine was listening to a show a few weeks ago, and he said, don't ever put it on top of the ground. Always put it in the hole.
Right. That's my understanding as well.
And I know it's good for flowers.
Yeah, it's good for everything. The main benefit of it helps.
Don't be worried about how much you use, but I was going to use, say, a teaspoon or a tablespoon per hole. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like if I was planting a landscape plant, like a 1 gallon or a 2 or 3 gallon rose bush or something, I'd throw a handful down in there. But okay. It depends on how big the plant is that you're putting in. But like you said, a little bit of, couple of tablespoons maybe. I don't know how big your plant is.
Yeah, I'm going to get ready to plant my tomatoes next week, and I was going to start trying to use it.
Yeah, you can't hurt anything with it. I think it's going to help.
I sure appreciate it.
Yes.
Y'all have a good Easter.
Y'all too. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye. Okay, I see you, Jessica, but I have to do the news here in a few seconds, so if y'all want to get in line, 512-836-0590, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to the Austin Gardener with Cheryl McLaughlin on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM.
Okay, we are back, and the app that I couldn't remember the name of, some very nice textures, it's called Picture This. That lady was looking to figure out what that plant was in her yard, and I couldn't quite tell what it was. All right, now let's head to Round Rock. Jessica, thank you for waiting. How can we help you?
Yes, ma'am. Good morning, Cheryl. We have a front yard that's very small with two very large oak trees about 10 feet apart, and we've had to scrape it all clean to start over this year. And we had some knockout roses right up next to the house that never took off. What are some things we could do better this time to get an east-facing, very small yard going?
You still have the trees?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's got to be, are they live oaks? So it's always shady?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, some of my favorite shade plants would be things like any of the ferns would do well there.
Okay.
There are some shade-loving salvia, black and blue sage, one of my favorites. It'll do in a lot of shade. Have you ever had variegated ginger?
No, not at all.
It is stunning. Now, it's not native, but it's got a great big variegated leaf. It's very pretty. And I love to mix that variegated ginger with ferns. And an evergreen fern you might want to try is called holly fern. And it stays green in the winter. What other shade plants are there that aren't terribly aggressive? I'm trying to think through this. You could probably do Dianella, which is a white-leafed flax lily. Dianella. And if you wanted to do some annuals, you could get a good backbone with some of the stuff we've talked about. And if you just want a shrub, you know, that'll do in the shade, you could always do dwarf yaupon, you know, and it's
okay.
It's just boring green, but it's always there, right?
Sounds real good. Thank you. Happy Easter.
Hey, same to y'all. Good luck with that project. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, my gosh. Somebody sent me the most astonishing photograph. I don't know where they got this, but it's an aerial view of what it first looks like a lake of water. And then when you read the caption, it says, this is the upper portion of the Buchanan Lake that has dried up. And the blue that you see is not water, but bluebonnets. And listen, this is stunning, a stunning photo. And to think that those seeds had been underwater when that lake was full. And this is the thing about bluebonnet seeds. They can just last for so long. But this picture, I don't know where they got this picture, but I hope they share it like on social media. Okay, let's see here. 512-836-0590. Let's see here. Good morning. We bought a house that had either Confederate jasmine or star jasmine on some trellises. They do okay, but we'd like to replace them with something like a crossvine. Do we need to dig up the jasmine, or if we plant the crossvine, will they eventually choke them out and take over the trellis? Right now, the jasmine are kind of short because they froze back in the winter. I don't know. For my money, I'd let them go both together because, you know, the crossvine only blooms for the most part. Sometimes it'll put on a random bloom, but crossvine only blooms in the spring. And they're a showpiece when they bloom. And then if the jasmine comes back, those bloom all the time, starting in hot weather particularly. But, yeah, the jasmine, the star jasmine, they really got frozen. They took a hit in that really cold weather. My friends have both these vines. So one of their fence lines was completely covered with star jasmine, and it just died. But the other fence line had the crossvine on it, which is, by the way, a native, right? And it is still there and doing great and blooming like crazy. So they tried to replant star jasmine, but it has never taken off like their other one did. So I don't know. But I'd say do a couple of different ones, right? Okay, the app is called Picture This. Thank you so much. All right. Okay, we have lines open, and you are welcome to call at 512-836-0590 or text that number as well. I hope you guys have great Easter plans. But if you're talking about landscape plans, I just want to remind you to check out Kevin Wood Landscapes. And the website is kevinwoodlandscapes.com. As you know, my husband and I started this company about 40 years ago. Now Michael Padilla is running it and doing a very good job of it. The emphasis is on sustainability, using native plants primarily, using very good soil, composted soils. But all the good construction projects that you might want, Kevin Wood Landscapes can do. And that Michael himself is a licensed irrigator. He helped figure out the most confusing, messed up irrigation system at the kids' school, which had been put in, I don't know, God knows how long ago. Nobody had a plan for it. It was broken. It wasn't working. Michael got that whole school up and running. So that's how Sarah was able to do the planting I've been talking about lately. Anyway, KevinWoodLandscapes.com. You know, you're going to need some lead time this time of year. All right. Let's see here. Here's another text. I can't get over that bluebonnet picture. Hi, Cheryl. I just have to promote Jerusalem sage blooming right now. It survived drought, freeze, and deer. Yes, they look great. We have some at our entry to our neighborhood, and they are already in full bloom. Ours were pretty exposed, so they got a little bit of freeze damage, but, man, they bounced right back. So I would have to recommend Jerusalem sage to anybody, especially when you have a lot of deer pressure. But remember, when you first plant little plants fresh out of the nursery, even if they're going to be deer resistant right at first, they're not. So we have to be protective of them for about the first 3 weeks or so. And that could be a cage, that could be, you know, liquid fence or one of those deer sprays or something like that, netting, you know, and then give them about 3 weeks. And then their natural pungency will come up. Because when, you know, nurseries, they have to fertilize them and stuff. They're all in little pots. And, you know, so sometimes that doesn't. Here's another text. All my old Akuba plants are turning yellow and droopy. Dang, are they getting too much water? That would be my first thought. Akuba turning yellow and droopy. That would be my first thought if they're just too darn wet. I haven't gotten so much rain as to, you know, cause anything to be too wet in my yard. But did y'all see the pictures of the hail out off Hamilton Pool Road? It looked like it snowed. I mean, there was an accumulation, a big accumulation. They got so much hail, and it just covered the yards. I was shocked when I saw that because, you know, it was that real stormy a few days ago. But I was really surprised to see the pictures of that. And the one I saw was in this neighborhood called Belvedere. But, my gosh, you can't believe how much hail they got. Which, of course, is a good deep watering, right? And, I mean, they got water. I don't know if your place got that much where your Akuba plants are. But the other thing that can cause that would be some insect damage. So look at them real close. All right, let's do the last break. Get that out of the way, Tate, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to The Austin Gardener with Cheryl McLaughlin on News Radio KLBJ, 590 AM and 99.7 FM.
Okay, we are back. Let's see. I was just trying to think about what else could be wrong with that Akuba. You know, they do have this disease called, that's a root rot disease, but the leaves turn black. I was wondering, hers are just turning yellow and droopy, but Akubas are definitely prone to getting one of those Phytophthora root rot issues. It's a soil disease. That is kind of a fatal disease, but if yours are just yellow and droopy, it could be, you know, something like too much water. Okay. All right. 512-836-0590. Call or text that number. Let's see here. How pretty. Here's another text. Happy, happy Easter, Cheryl. We appreciate you so much over the years. Thank you. Don't know why, but it's an incredible spring for wildflowers just this year. Just one of those years. Our yard in Clarksville is like the Wizard of Oz. Reminder to enjoy it all before the coming inferno. Before the inferno. Thank you so much for all the advice and help. Aw. These are so pretty. They look like red poppies. Boy, don't let my daughter see those. She'll be taking all your seeds, and she lives in Clarksville. She planted the most beautiful garden She doesn't get much sun because she's got these ginormous oak trees. But there was one little patch in the front side of the house that got sun. And so she had that dug up, put in drip irrigation, and she went crazy in plants. And I mean it, and she covered it when it froze and everything. Oh my gosh, it's so pretty now. I've talked about it before, but she's got all kinds of salvias, mist flower, Blackfoot daisies, which have been blooming for I don't know how long. Aren't they not fabulous this year? The Blackfoot daisies are just amazing this year. Now they'll grow out of just rock, and they'll also grow in Clarksville. All right, we have a caller online. Let's head to Luling. Hello, Jim. How you doing?
I am doing fine, ma'am. Doing really well this morning.
Good.
I have a native plum tree that last year, starting in August, all of a sudden it started bubbling sap. Would come out and be about the size of marbles,
mm-hmm.
all the way up the base of the tree. And it's about a 4-year-old tree.
Wow.
So far this year, it has not sprouted leaves. And I didn't know what caused this to occur.
It would be borers. And they will definitely kill the tree.
All right.
So,
will they attack my peach trees that are about 15 foot away?
Yes, they sure will. In fact, the plum probably got it. I don't know if your peaches have it, but peach tree borers. This is why they recommend doing the dormant oil sprays on fruit trees.
Okay.
To help with this sort of problem. I don't know if your little old plum is going to make it or not. It probably should be getting leaves on it already. But if not, you can start over, but just, you know, in the winter, since you do have peaches and plums now, I would do a dormant oil spray. And they're not those old-fashioned kind. You know, they used to be made out of petroleum products. Nowadays, they're vegetable oil sprays. So they're not.
Okay.
They're very lightweight sprays, and they're not something obnoxious.
All right. Is there anything that I can put around my peaches this summer to try to keep them from coming down with it?
The major thing you can do for this to break the cycle is to have thick mulch around the base of the trees, like 10 feet around each tree if you can, because it breaks that soil because the larvae overwinter in the soil. And then they'll climb right back up, but they first have to drop down and burrow into the soil. And if you have a good thick mulch around your fruit trees, they can't get through it. So that's incredibly important, people, for anybody with fruit trees. Good thick mulch helps break that cycle. And then with the dormant oil spray, that'll really help knock out this problem.
All right. And if I remove this plum tree, how long should I wait before I try to replant another tree in that same location?
You can do it right away.
Okay.
You can do it right away. Oh. Just keep your eyes open. I would, if I were you, to get more information, because I'm no expert on these kinds of things, but that's where the AgriLife website comes in to play, the A&M's Extension Service. So I don't know what county y'all are in, but if you go to AgriLife, A-G-R-I, Life, whatever, put your county in. It'll come up with that website. And then once you click on the website, then you can navigate through all the choices. And there are some for home orchards. That's probably where you're going to get your best information about how to prevent things, you know, and also to treat things.
Okay, yeah, I'm in Caldwell County,
yeah.
Right on the Caldwell Gonzales line. So
yeah,
okay, I appreciate that very much.
Good luck with that. I'm sorry that happened to you.
Now my peach trees so far, this is the seventh year for them. So far, they are just loaded, overwhelmed. I'm going to have to do thinning, I think, on my peaches. They're called a Techstar peach.
Oh, yeah. And those are supposed to be really good.
They're in clusters. It looks more like a grapevine right now, grape clusters than it does peach.
Well, you probably are going to...
What would be the best method of thinning those out?
Here's somebody that just actually texted... this is a joke, but somebody texted earlier and said you want to leave about 4 inches between each peach. But this little joke says here, it's hard to thin your own peaches. You hate to lose all that fruit. So the joke in the industry is you thin your neighbor's peach trees and he thins yours.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
I appreciate your program.
Sure. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Bye-bye. About to cough. Hold on. Probably have inhaled about 50 pounds of oat pollen. I think that's what's bugging me right now. That's a cute joke, though, about you thin your neighbor's peach tree and he thins yours. That's hilarious. Makes sense, though. Okay, a month ago, I planted a row of 5 15-gallon wax myrtles. I'm having a problem with one losing all of the leaves in the center of the plant. I'm afraid it's not getting enough water. My question is, how do I know if I'm giving enough water to reach the bottom of the root ball? The top 5 inches of the soil feels wet. Well, you planted a row of five. How are the other ones doing? If the other ones are just fine, they're not having this issue. It could just be a temporary shock thing from planting them. The roots that supply that particular area of the plant might have gotten a little bit damaged. But I think if it's wet, that deep, you should be fine. But 15 gallons, that is hard to get all the way to the bottom of that. I would be sure and soak the dickens out of the wax myrtles because they can take the water. They are really native to East Texas, and they get more rain over there than we do here. But if the others are all doing well and just this one is having an issue, I think it'll overcome it. I hope so, because it might be that they're dry. If the others start showing problems, then you might know that you're not getting it deep enough. Listen, it takes a lot to get the soil wet down to the bottom of a 15-gallon plant. So this is why I'm not a huge fan of drip systems. I just got a text that plant that we were trying to identify, she says she used a plant ID, and it says it's horseweed. Good or bad, letting my backyard go to grass, go, no grass, xeriscape. Horseweed, I've never heard of that. But that's the problem with common names. Don't get me started. Don't get me started. Okay, well, we don't have much time left, but I hope you guys have a really good Easter. And again, if you feel like you want to get a project started, please do consider Kevin Wood Landscapes. .com. That's the website. You can go on there and see pictures of stuff and see what you'd like. And if you want, say, a water feature, or if you want lighting in your yard, or if you just want a good bunch of plants, maybe you need a deck or a patio or a stone wall or terracing. All that can be done by Kevin Wood Landscapes. So anyway, y'all have a good Easter. I'm glad it's not pouring rain. It's a really nice day. It's only going to get up to 80. Enjoy these last days, as this one texter said, before the inferno comes around. And be planting anything. Anything you want to plant right now, you can plant. So I know Hill Country's closed today, but the Natural Gardener's open. So get out there and get you some plants, and tune back in next Sunday. I'll see y'all then at 10 a.m.